when I moved here 9 years ago, I did not expect to be sitting here today. So that's the first thing. And I think that in itself is power and an example of what Tony Robbins says it's greatly. You overestimate what you can achieve in a year, but you underestimate what you can achieve in a decade. And that is so powerful. And I've outstripped what I thought I would achieve when I started down this path. And that's the beauty of what we do in becoming an entrepreneur and discovering oneself is in the mindset is because humans are pretty incredible creatures when you put your mind to it, right? Like it is about mindset.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Reed Goossens, welcome to the show.
G'day, mate. Thanks for having me.
Hey, man, the pleasure's mine. You know, if you don't mind, just quickly give our listeners a bio on who it is they're listening to you and just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, West Texas accent, right? All the way from down under. Yeah, that's right. I'm originally not from Australia. I'm not from America. I'm from Australia. I moved here about 2012, so I can't do the math, carry the one, 9 years ago exactly, to chase a girl and really to live as an expat here in New York, not in New York City, here in the United States, because I wanted to live in the US for a period of time. Fast forward 9 years later, through many, many ups and downs and sleepless nights and visa issues and all the good stuff, I built a company that has now about $450 million assets under management, multifamily acquisitions in Central Texas. I'm the co-founder of two different companies. I've written a couple of books. I've started a podcast and hopefully I've tried to keep down to earth as possible during that time. So my story is really about inspiring others to take action. I moved here with no experience. I moved here with limited funds. I didn't know anyone. I was chasing a girl. I was trying to get a visa, all the things. And, you know, my story is if I can do it moving halfway across the world, then so can the average American.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. I love the, if you can do it, so can anybody else, you know, stories. I think that's part of the, I think that we're losing here in the American dream, which is that you can come here still, even though the regulations and the hurdles are getting higher, you can still come here and do it. It's still possible. So tell us about that journey. I've got three questions I ask everybody who comes on the show, and you've kind of answered some of it, but the three are this. So I have to say it because we've said it for 300 and whatever, 20 episodes at this point. Where'd you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Yeah. So look, the start of it all, after I graduated uni, I'm a trans instructional engineering. So 07, finished uni, go to London. And I got a job in London working on the 2012 Olympic Games, building all the infrastructure. But in 2008, obviously leading up to Olympics, you need years and years and years of infrastructure. So I went there for a year, then went after the visa ran out there, I went to the south of France and I was working as a deckhand on the wealthy mega yachts. Have you ever seen Below Deck on Bravo? I worked for a Russian billionaire as a deckhand across the Atlantic Ocean. But in that time, I had a weekend off and I went to Running the Bulls. And I bumped into this really cute girl who turns out to be my wife all these years later. And we kept in touch. And this is in 09. I crossed the Atlantic Ocean to the Caribbean on this boat. I then have had a great time, but I've also studied engineering and I didn't want to be the hired help. And I then backpacked through the United States, fall in love with the US, particularly New York City. This is 09. Moved back to Australia in my day job, back in my engineering job, and in love with this girl who's halfway across the world. And I just sort of say to myself, like, you know, I love studying engineering, but I didn't love being, you know, a small cog in a big machine. And a lot of people probably listening to this have the same feeling, you know, stuck in a cubicle. And for me, it was just, how can someone pay me to live my life? And I don't know what that meant. I didn't even know what entrepreneurship meant. And that's when I stumbled upon the book Rich Dad Poor Dad. And that got me started in my thought process of I can do more. I felt like a star athlete sitting on the sidelines watching them life go by and just like, you know, punching the clock and just knew I had more to give, but didn't know what that was. And this is in 2010, 2011. I started educating myself about real estate. And then at the end of 2011, I made the decision, like, stuff it. I'm moving halfway across the world. I'm going to go chase this girl. I want to live in New York City for a period of time. I was 26. I sort of thought, will my 65-year-old self regret this move? Because the worst case scenario is I move there and I don't get a job and I have to move back to Australia. Well, that's the worst case. If that's the worst thing that happened to me, then I'm going to give it a go. That's the start of the Coming to America story. And then in that time of that sort of transitioning after reading Rich Dad Poor Dad into moving to the United States, I was self-educating along the way, like just hungry for knowledge. And when I moved to the US, the access to information, and this is to all your listeners out there, is so much more plentiful than what I had in Australia. You know, I'm talking about the real estate investment associations, the meetup groups, the stuff like the podcast. Obviously, podcasting is huge now, But back in 2012, the US had a rich tapestry of networking events that I could tap into that was not a, just weren't a readily available in Australia. We don't have the population size. We don't have the sophistication in organizations like that, like the meetup.coms and all that sort of stuff. So being in New York City at these RIA events, like I'm 2 weeks fresh off the boat and I'm at my first RIA event paying $30 to get in the door. And I'm just going, wow, there's 200 other people in here all wanting to do the same thing as me. And here I am, you know, already made the hard decision, already moved halfway across the world, got the job, right? Got the visa, started moving in with a girlfriend. And it was sort of just like, well, this, I've done all the hard parts. Let's start looking at some real estate here. And for me, it was just some really incredible opportunities that also presented itself because in Australia, we don't have the secondary tertiary markets like you do here in the US. We don't have $50,000 properties. I bought my first property for $38,000. And so that's the coming to America story. There's a lot in there, but that's the coming to America story that I tell and I speak about a lot because there was a lot of ups and downs to get to here and some cool stories along the way that I can probably tell you over a drink some other time offline. But yeah, it's been a pretty hell of a ride to get to it, just even getting to the US.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And the courage it takes to do that. I mean, kudos to you for just, again, having the chutzpah to go, all right, you know what? We're going to do this. And worst case scenario, I think somebody I was listening to here recently said it, you know, they overcome their fear by simply calculating what is the downside risk and saying, quantify that risk. And once you know that risk, then, you know, you can either proceed ahead or say that risk is too great. So I think you did that. Talk to us about, you know, you said you bought your first property for 38 grand, surely not a multifamily property. So quickly give us the transition story from maybe that $38,000 property till you finally said, all right, look, I want to go into bigger assets, and then talk to us maybe about why.
Well, for me, up until that purchase of that first property, it was, I've been self-educating about 2.5 years. Again, probably a lot of the listeners, maybe in that same boat, they've been educating for a long period of time. And I was being pitched these mentorships and all this stuff. And I was like, look, I need to go out and do it myself. I've always been that guy that I want to go give it a go. And for me, it was, I didn't have a lot of money. I had some money saved and no one was going to lend to me, right? So being fresh off the boat, I didn't know what a credit score was. So I had to go use the money I'd saved from my corporate job, which was literally everything I had, to buy this the first $38,000 property, right? I don't get to deal number 10 without doing that first deal. And that was really, really powerful in me because I knew I just needed to get off the starting blocks because it'd been a couple of years of reading the books and doing, like I was educating myself in Australia before moving to the US. So it was really a, hey man, you got to get going. You got to get in the deep end. You got to the analysis paralysis stage. You understand there as much risk as you can by reading a book. The next thing is actually go out and taking action. And I went out and tried to buy the biggest property I could for whatever I had in my bank account. And that was $38,000. And it was a triplex. It was actually a single family and a duplex on the same kind of lot. And this was in Syracuse, New York. It wasn't anything spectacular, but it was something that I could afford, which was the first big thing. And I could get to it in 4 hours of driving. And I never actually drove. I didn't have a car when I was living in New York City. I took the Greyhound bus. So I could get up there and back in a day. And that's all I needed, right? So the second part of your question is how do I transition? Everyone always wants to know about how do I transition. And just getting that first property done was a struggle. But what happened then was I was able to develop a little bit of credibility with the local bank. I pulled some money out of that first property, just a basic line of credit, and I bought a second one. And then that second one, and I'm still working full-time, I'm saving a bit more money. But then I bought a fix and flip in Philadelphia. And this is over about a period of a year and a half. At the same time, I sit down with a good buddy of mine who's come down. Everyone travels through New York. Hey, man, I'm coming through New York. Let's meet up for a beer. So I meet up for a beer with my mate Scott. He's from Canada. We'd studied civil engineering together in Australia. And he goes, I'm boasting to him. Like, I'm like, hey, man, guess what I'm doing, right? I've got two properties and I'm doing this flip. I'm crushing it, right? I thought I was a bee's knees.
Right.
And he goes on to tell me, he's like, oh, man, it's, you know, well done. Great, 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 great. But he tells me about a 70-unit deal he's just closed with his business partner. And I was like, I didn't even know you're in real estate. And I was like, two, how the hell do you guys own 70 units? That's like 70. That's a lot of units. Like, that just blew my mind. And he goes on to talk about other people's money. He goes on to talk about getting a mentor. He goes on to talk about, you know, seller carryback finance, all these things that I'd been teaching myself in the books. But here's a guy in front of me who's just raised the bar, right? He's just put the bar at a new level. And I'm like, well, if he can do it, why can't I do it? And that was where, at the same time, I was knowing that I was getting to the end of my tether. The third property, the Philadelphia property, was going to be the maximum of the leverage based on my income. I couldn't probably afford much more than that. So I ended up liquidating those two properties in Syracuse. I went and got a mentor because I knew if I wanted to play a bigger game, I needed to go and get a mentor.
So how much did you get out of those liquidations? Because this will tie into one of my last questions.
Yes. So the liquidations, and I will say, the first property that I bought, that triplex, I had issues, right? Fresh-faced, bushy-eyed Australian learning about Section 8 housing here in the United States. I learned about it, right? On paper, it's great. For the first 6 months, it's great. But then there was a drive-by shooting and blah, blah, blah. And I think I ended up making, I definitely made my money back. So I think I sold it, ended up selling for $60,000, but I'd put 10 grand into it, plus the cash flow on top. So I definitely came out ahead and I learned things along the way, which was the best experience, right? So you couldn't ask much more than that. Didn't lose my money, made a little bit, not a ton, but I learned the experience gave me the confidence to go up and do more.
Well, there's that one for say you made 12 grand on that, right? And so then what was the other property?
The other property was a $45,000 property that was, I used to call the ATM. It was two immigrant families. They pay on time. It was freaking great. I think I bought it for 45. I think we ended up selling it for 60. They weren't simultaneously. They sort of one sold first and then we sold the second one.
Right.
But again, Sam, it's about giving yourself the permission to show that you did it. And I did it, right? I got those first couple of deals done. So that's what helped me propel me into the next stage of the career.
Right. So you had 25 or 30 grand maybe in net profits total from those two deals. And you said, all right, we're going to clear the decks and we're going to do the next phase. So what was the next phase?
So the next phase was going out and finding a mentor, right? And I was pretty frugal. I didn't want to pay anymore. I think I paid $2,500 for my mentor, and he's a pretty famous guy now that you probably all know. I think it was his second or third student. He'd only done one bigger deal than before I came on board. So he didn't have a ton of experience, but he was also, youngish like me, in his early 30s at the time. And it was just enough to, again, back to the mental state, the money I spent on this gentleman, it was back to I'm worth spending money on myself to improve my education. Because if I can't take a bet on myself, then who am I going to be able to take a bet on, right? And so many people listening to this show are stuck on the sidelines because they're not willing to take a bet on themselves. Like my journey of moving to the United States, I was taking a bet that I could get a job and I could work out with the girlfriend, right? That's the bet I was taking. And the second bet, okay, I'm going to go liquidate some deal. The second bet was, I can do this. I'm going to go find some properties. And I found a property. And a third bet, okay, I need a mentor, right? All these things are a little, I'm telling you, crumbs and secrets that if you look back in your own life, you're going to see those bets that keep coming up. And if you don't take them, then you're going to miss out. And the fear of regret for me is really quite a big driving factor. So got the mentor, and that mentor helped me. It wasn't a silver bullet, but it helped me start paving the way towards where I am today. And there's a whole journey in that of itself. So I'll stop there.
And one of the things that, I love focusing on this show is mindset, right? There's enough how-to books out there that are going to say, hey, go do this, go do this, step by step. As someone said recently, they just said, it was on the show, they just said, hey, you know what? This is not rocket science. It's a pretty fairly cut and dry path. If you repeat the steps of about the first 10,000 people that you see doing it ahead of you, you'll figure it out. Right. It's not rocket science, but some of the things that you've mentioned here, finding a mentor is great. I love the bet on yourself idea. Right. I mean, that's the new way of putting it that I don't think a lot of people really consider, is that you do invest and bet on yourself. But I really want to focus in on your fear of regret, because I wonder how has, now that you've gone from two properties to $450 million in multifamily properties, what are some things right now that are fears of regret that you are currently working against or trying to overcome?
Well, I will say that I'm sitting here hand on heart. I did not expect to be sitting here. When I moved here 9 years ago, I did not expect to be sitting here today. So that's the first thing. And I think that in itself is power and an example of what Tony Robbins says. It's greatly, you overestimate what you can achieve in a year, but you underestimate what you can achieve in a decade. And that is so powerful. And I've outstripped what I thought I would achieve when I started down this path. And that's the beauty of what we do in becoming an entrepreneur and discovering oneself is in the mindset, is because humans are pretty incredible creatures when you put your mind to it, right? Like, it is about mindset. And so for me now, I'm in my mid-30s. I don't stress what's going to happen in my mid-40s, because the last 10 years have been freaking awesome. I know the next 10 years are going to be even better. And having that, I think it's a mental calm or mental resilience. I don't know quite what the word would be, but that comes through a lot of hard work. It comes through a lot of what you were talking about, betting on yourself. And it is really driven from the fact that I ever want to look back on my life and say, geez, I wish I gave that a go, right? And that's what I ask. And I challenge all the listeners today, what would your 65-year-old self say about your decision today? And if they approve of it and say, heck yeah, I'm glad I did that. Even if I failed, even if you failed, I'm still glad I did it. And I bet you every single one of you will ask that question and go, yeah, my 65-year-old self will thank me for this.
What are some things your 65-year-old self will thank you for that you have tried and failed at?
So many things, my friends. Like even the first property, right? Like it was not smooth sailing. It had a lot of speed bumps. These success stories that you hear that you crack it out of the park on deal one, it's all bogus. Like good on the people who can do it. The reality is you learn. And it's not about the money you make in that first deal. It's about getting your foot in the door. And that's important because again, it goes back to what I said earlier. You don't get to deal number 10 without doing deal number one. And you're going to learn every deal you do. There's deals that I do today that I learn a little bit from and a little bit from that. And it just keeps building that pyramid of knowledge and education that just makes me a better investor, entrepreneur. It makes me a better human in terms of realization and rocking up in other parts of my life. So if I'm thinking about a specific instance, like there's been so many, like I remember the fix and flip deal in Philly. I'm a structural engineer. I've been building with GCs all my life. You know, $1 million projects from the London Olympics all the way through to stuff I was doing in New York. When it was my own $300,000 property, I still had bloody issues. You know, I still had GCs stealing product from me, firing the GC. He's not calling out the inspectors to sign off on the HVAC. Like all this stuff, you have to know that you're going to find a solution. And I think that's the biggest lesson when you go through these lessons or issues is the resilience that you build, the callus on your hands from these experiences that will make you better. So nothing has ever killed me. Nothing's killed me, right? I'm still here to fight another day. But those experiences, when I look back, I'm going to do it better next time. And how do I do it better next time? I've got to reflect on the things that I did wrong the first time. And I think that's the power of the mindset, because you will fail. Like there will be stuff, there will not fail, but you will have hiccups along the way. And everyone constantly says, well, I can't have any hiccups because I'm too mentally fragile for that. Well, change that narrative. There might be some along the way, and that's okay, because that is just life. Life is not linear. It is all over the shop, up and down, backwards and sideways. And that's okay. And when you become okay with that, you become okay with the worst case scenario, then that's going to help you make that decision to move forward and go back to betting on yourself and say, you can do this.
Absolutely. I love that. Doing deal number one in single family is one thing. Doing deal number one in a multifamily project is another thing. What gave you the confidence and courage to take down your first multifamily project? And a question, so I'll ask you that one, and then we'll tag team it with this one. How did you raise the money for it?
We rewind back to the very, very first deal. I was actually involved as really an introduction. So I had my mentor, right? I moved to LA. I started just a once a month, you know, Thursday pub night, real estate, happy hour thing. And it was just a way, I was still working full time as a structural engineer. It was just a way to meet other people. And through that event, I met another young gentleman who was a little bit older than me, but he was working as an asset manager. And he had found a really great deal in Houston, Texas. This is in 2014, but he didn't know how to raise the money. And I said, well, I've got this mentor over here that apparently can raise money. Like you guys should definitely talk. And my mentor was like, nah, like he was probably a little nervous as well. And I was like, man, this is a pretty freaking good deal. It's a 7 cap for 2000 build, 250 units. Like it was great. Like
people are fawning over those words right now, by the way.
I know. But remember, it was 2014. There was blood on the streets in Houston. Like
sure.
You just got to understand the times. And I pushed him again. And they ultimately went on to form a really big company today. They have over 10,000 units themselves. And I was involved in that first year. Now, I didn't raise a ton of money there, but that I just knew two guys that had gone on to be successful. Now, subsequent deals from that, I actually raised money for them. How did I do that? Well, I started my podcast. I started my email building list, right? I focused on my story, you know, because I had a little bit, you know, to talk about. And that helped me raise my first bit of dollars. I did 3 or 4 deals co-syndication before I went out on my own. And that first step, when you went out on your own, we actually bought 192 units in San Antonio. I remember to this day, I've got a gray patch on the back of my head. My wife talks about that's my real estate gray patch. But it was stressful, man. Like I remember that we had to raise $6.9 million. And I think I personally raised nearly $2 million myself. My business partner at the time, still today, he raised a bit. We brought in some other people to help raise some other co-GPs. It was stressful, right? And one of the groups didn't perform. And we had to pivot really quickly. We were stressing out that we couldn't raise this money, but we ended up getting it done in time. But again, it's a big leap of faith. And I'm sure a question will be like, well, how are you going to have the money raised? How are you not going to have the money raised? It's all about that gut feeling of like, we're going to have to eventually take the big leap of faith at some point and know that Because when your back's against the wall and you've got a deal under contract, you will do everything in your power to get it closed. So, yeah, and that's led on to more deals from that since then. So
that's Cortez's burning of the ships, man.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Wow. That's really cool. I love that. I think I always say that those with the most to do get the most done. Right. It's kind of a stupid phrase, but it's like, wait, you know, we're against the wall. We've got to get this done. Like, you can't dither and worry about it. Go get it done. I think that's absolutely fantastic, Reed. I've really enjoyed hearing a little bit of the nuance to your story, especially just the mindset and how you've used that to really grow your company to what it is today. What do you want? Last question is this. When you look into the future and you say, okay, I want our investment business to look like this in the next 10 years, what does that look like?
If I'm being honest, like there will be some iteration of me probably doing some deals back in Australia. Australia is where I'm from. I've grinded my teeth over here. I think there's opportunities back in Australia. What I've learned here, I could reapply in Australia. I think there's fund opportunities to raise money here because multifamily doesn't exist on the scale it does in the US. Well, that's a lot to do with financing. So probably some point in the future, I will get out of the operation stage of my, you know, being the operator and probably move into some sort of private equity fund structure, you know, be the guy, you know, in late 40s, early 50s that is betting on the young hustler, you know, the young 30-year-old that I was back in the day and giving him a go. I'll always be involved in real estate. There's real estate across the globe. And that's the beauty of, I don't have a true marker of where I need to be. And it goes back to my statement earlier, because I've already, the last 10 years have been freaking great. I just know if I keep doing what I'm doing, those next 10 years, doors are going to open and I'm going to just have to be just got to walk through them, right? And just know that it will work itself out. So enough opportunities have come my way that I can look back and say that when another opportunity comes up, I know when to take it, if that makes sense.
Right.
There's a loose goal out there, but in saying that I'm really also trying to be present in what I'm growing today and not thinking too far in the future and just enjoying my journey along the way.
100%. I love that. I love that. Fantastic. Reed, final four questions are this. And I think you've kind of answered it because the first question is, if I gave you just $20,000 to invest in real estate with no previous real estate investing experience, what would you do with it and why? And I think you said you may have netted, I mean, just back of the napkin math, 25 or 30 grand on your first two deals, maybe.
Taking out commissions and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. So maybe 20 grand. So maybe there's your number exactly. So it's still the first question. So would you do anything differently?
Mm-mm. Wouldn't do anything differently. The experiences I've had to this day, I would not do anything differently. The only thing I would do, differently is I wouldn't put fixed rate debt on my first multifamily deal, my big one, because that was, I've got a huge defeasance on that and looking, and we all thought interest rates are going to the moon. We did the right thing at the time, but having multiple exit options is really, really helpful as you're trying to grow a business. So my only advice in and around looking backwards would be just hedging your interest rate risk for sure. But make sure you can get out of it without, you know, paying your arm and leg for it.
That's fantastic. You answered my first two questions then already. My second question was this, which is, if you could help our listeners avoid one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it? Sounds like you've got that one knocked out of the park. Question number three then. Man, you're ahead of me. I've never had this happen. Which is, when it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
That's a very good question. I try to educate as much people as I can through my own podcast. I try and this, me and you just talking right now, hopefully someone out there is listening to it and is inspired a little bit. And I'm a pretty down-to-earth guy. If you ever want to approach me and ask me any question, I've been in the struggle. I've been in the W-2 job trying to get out of it and make a thing for myself. So giving back in that way, I want to do more as I move out of the operations stuff and, you know, I start becoming more CEO level stuff. And that's, you know, in and around some really personal charities I want to give back, and cancer's affected my personal family in a big way. So I want to give back in that sort of stuff. But also, you know, being halfway across the world from my current family, you know, I want to spend some more time with them as, you know, COVID is keeping us apart for many, many years. So in the immediate future, it's just, you know, trying to continue to inspire people, continue to share my story and also spend some quality time with my family.
That's awesome. Last question. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Head over to reedgoossens.com. That's www.reedgoossens.com. And if you're ever coming through Los Angeles and you want to meet up for a beer or coffee, just hit me up at info@reedgoossens.com. On my website, you can check out the podcast, the books, you know, my portfolio, all that sort of good stuff. And just let me know if you come through LA and we'll meet up and get on the schedule.
Reed, thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Mate. Awesome stuff. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.